These Days.
Kids These Days.
This is Kids These Days.
Standardized tests and testing, that's our subject today on the program. We're going to be talking all about them. Why are there as many as there are? How are they administered in Alaska? What should you expect as a caregiver? And how do we all understand what it is they're measuring? And why do they matter? I'm joined by three Alaskans today who can help us sort these things out. Plus, we get the scoop on AYP, or Adequate Yearly Progress, a measurement that's come into prominence since the passing of the federal No Child Left Behind Act. We hear from several educators about their views on whether standardized tests work for their students or not, and we learn about the Common Core standards and get one high school senior's perspective on the best known standardized tests around, the ones you take to get into college. That and lots more today on Kids These Days. Hi, I'm Shanna Sheehy. Today's topic is standardized tests and testing and how they intersect with family life here in Alaska. And like always, we want to hear from you. What do you remember about standardized tests? Did you sweat them? Did you goof off and make patterns on the bubbles on the Scantron answer sheets? Do you have something to say about how your school-age child feels about them? Tell us your stories by sending word to mail@kidsthesedays.org or head on over to our website and leave a comment or find our Facebook page. Search for that by looking for Kids These Days Radio. Well, three Alaskans are spending this hour with me today. Dana Stahl has worked in education for nearly 30 years. More than 20 of those were as an elementary classroom teacher. She has also worked as a Title I teacher and an English language learner teacher and coach. She currently has the position of training and instructional specialist for the Anchorage School District, where she works with kindergarten through sixth grade classroom teachers and helps them implement best practices in math, reading, writing, and the instruction of that. Thanks so much for being with us today, Dana.
Good morning. Thank you.
And Janet Valentour is an administrator in the assessment unit of the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development. Her formal education includes a master's degree in educational technology from the University of Alaska Southeast. Janet taught for 12 years in elementary and middle schools in Juneau prior to her state employment. She's at her office in the state capitol today. Thanks so much for being with us, Janet.
Thank you.
And Laurel Vorachik is the Executive Director of Assessment and Evaluation with the Anchorage School District. Her department is responsible for all state-mandated assessments and supports several district-level assessments. Her department is also responsible for data analysis and reporting. They prepare the annual profile of performance, which is the district's report on performance. And prior to her work in assessment and evaluation, Laurel was a guidance counselor for 12 years and a classroom teacher before that. Thanks for being with us, Laurel.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, I'd like to begin today's conversation by asking, and Janet, maybe you're the right person to ask about this first, but for those of us who grew up in a time when there was standardized testing happening for us during our education, and for those of us who maybe even did that in Alaska in the school system somewhere in the state, and maybe have kids out there today who are encountering standardized tests, how might today's state assessments and what's happening here in Alaska as far as standardized testing goes, how does that look the same or maybe look different from, say, you know, a student from 30 years ago?
Well, that's a good question. I think the greatest difference today is students are tested at every grade level, and there is an expectation of accountability that students will achieve a target of learning. 30 years ago, there was some testing, but it's not clear to me exactly how those test results were used in terms of assisting teachers in the classroom or showing students are making growth in their learning.
Okay, so now you're saying the difference is that there's an expectation that these tests will show accountability on the part of the student for having actually learned the information, and then also for the teachers or the educators for having taught the information?
Right. The biggest difference that I see is that accountability has been brought into the picture, and there's accountability for students, accountability for teachers, and administrators.
Okay. And Laura Vorachik, you have comments.
Another difference that I would say between the assessments overall that were done 30 years ago compared to what we have now is that we are assessing students on standards that have been adopted by the state of Alaska. Most, and we still do have some norm reference tests where we are compared to a norm nationally, but the types of tests, that standardized tests that students were taking 30 years ago, were not based on Alaska standards. They were based on, they were a nationally normed assessment for the most part. And I certainly agree with what Janet has said in terms of how those were used instructionally. It really was just a benchmark in how you compared to the norm that you basically normed that test, where now the expectation is how are you using that data to change your instruction to ensure that students are meeting the standard.
Okay, and so these are Alaska-specific standards.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'd like to know about them. You know, for those of us who don't necessarily know even that there are categories of standards, you know, what is sort of the quick explanation of what these standards are? And it looks like Dana's maybe the person to answer that question.
The standards are broken up by grade levels and by content areas. So each grade has its specific content that it's supposed to be focusing on. For example, in kindergarten for writing, it might be just being able to put a capital and an ending mark at the end of a sentence, and then that progresses up through the grade levels until it is, you know, fully developed paragraphs, and then on to writing whole essays. So it's just looking at each area and how those skills should be developed on through it. And the nice thing about technology now is when the students are tested, teachers can get a breakdown of where the skills are that certain students need to be working on. Mm-hmm. So I think it has changed a lot in how tests were used in the past. Like Laurel was saying, that before it was all just norm referenced how they compared overall to people in the whole United States, and now it is more for guiding instruction and actually using that data to pinpoint what it is the students need to be working on.
Okay, and so when we say this term norm, that means like where you take all this different information about kids at a certain age and a certain development, and you look to see how all of them do when asked certain questions, and then you come up with some sort of normed answer for what looks like an average ability or above average.
A percentile,
okay,
yeah.
A percentile. So the standards, you say that they're based on grade. Where are they coming from? Like, does this come from educational research that says like a third grader should be able to, you know, use capital letters and so on and so forth? But where does the actual gauge of what a student should do in third, fifth, seventh, ninth, and so on actually come from?
Well, Alaska is looking at the core standards that have already been developed, and then looking to see how they best fits into the Alaska standards.
Alaska standards. Yeah. Okay, so when you say core standards, are we talking about this Common Core?
Common Core.
Okay.
And there are educators on the committees, there are parents, anybody can get involved. They're still open for comment on. You can still get on online and give comments to what your thoughts are. But they are developed by a huge, different, diversified community that are working on them.
Okay, so what we're talking about here are the proposed new Alaska standards. And right now, as you mentioned, Dana, there's a public comment period that's open through the end of May 2012. And this is when people can weigh in on the proposed changes to Alaska standards. And Janet, I wanted to ask you if you maybe want to clarify a little bit about Alaska standards and what's there now and what's being proposed for changes.
Yes, and I think Dana did a very nice job of summarizing what those standards look like in the classroom today, but I wanted to just give a little bit more background in terms of your question, which was about are they appropriate, is there research behind them? Mm-hmm. And Alaska has about 12 areas of standards, and really what they are broad statements of what students should know and be able to do as a result of their 12 years. And those standards include the English language arts, mathematics, science, geography, government and citizenship, history, skills for a healthy life, arts, world languages, technology, physical education, Alaska history. so they're across all content areas. But today, we're focusing on revising our English language arts and our mathematics standards. And it's reasonable for states to revise standards every 6-8 years, take a look at what has changed, what do the experts know in terms of research, and incorporate that into the revision process. Mm-hmm. Dana mentioned that the nation is moving toward a national standard, and they're called the Common Core Standards, and they cover English language arts and mathematics. Alaska has incorporated some of the Common Core Standards, and so our new standards are out for public comment at this time. Mm-hmm. And what our national experts are telling us is that we need to be more rigorous in our content so that our students are prepared better for national competition in employment after high school or college preparedness, and the same thing at a global level.
Mm-hmm. And so, yes, on this Common Core State Standards Initiative, we will link to that website from our website at kidsthesedays.org, so that if you're interested, you can go and look at some of those standards and I also see a map of like different states that have incorporated them. And I wanted to mention also, I found this, according to the National PTA, they have some reasons why they support this Common Core Standards State Initiative, Common Core State Standards Initiative. They say it's good for students because it helps prepare students, as you say, with the knowledge and skills they need to achieve success in college and careers. It talks about why they're good for parents. It helps parents understand exactly what students need to know and be able to facilitate their education step by step. It also talks about why Common Core Standards are good for teachers, allowing for more focused and professional development and so on and so forth. And we'll also link to that information from the National PTA from our website as well, and that's kidsthesedays.org. And since we're talking about these core standards, I want to play this as well right now. As of now, almost every state has signed on to adopt the new grade-by-grade math and reading assessment called the Common Core State Standards. The initiative is meant to ensure that a third grader in Florida is learning the same skills as a third grader in Maine or Utah and, you know, anywhere else in America. Critics of these national standards say it's the responsibility of each state to evaluate a student's progress. And advocates, on the other hand, point out the value of comparability in a country with a transient population as high as it is here in the U.S. And Alaska is one of a handful of states that have not yet adopted those standards, officially this Common Core. And KTD producer Sarah Gonzalez spoke with Tom Lovelace, and he's a senior fellow at the Brown Center on Education Policy at the Brookings Institution, and she asked him about the Common Core state standards and standardized testing on a national level.
There's never been a set of national academic standards in the United States. Under the Constitution, education is not mentioned in the Constitution. And historically, education has been controlled by the states. It is in every state constitution that states are responsible for providing public schooling. And so, for the most part, academic standards have been at the state level, or, as a matter of fact, even that's rather recent, up until the middle of the 20th century or so, actually most standards were simply developed at the local level, among local school districts, or even at the school level. So this idea of centralizing and standardizing educational standards at an upper level, at a state level, or federal level is a pretty new idea, especially the federal level. Now, what's happened over the last 4 or 5 years has been a real solid push for having a set of national standards. There are people who have complained about under No Child Left Behind, it really showed that the standards from state to state can be quite different. So you could be deemed proficient under No Child Left Behind in one state, but if you move to another state, you're not necessarily proficient. Many of the states have banded together. Over 40 of the states, as I said earlier, have signed on to this effort. They've banded together. Standards were written in both English language arts and mathematics. Very specific standards through eighth grade, and then a little fuzzier when it comes to high school, although content was still described through the high school level, through grade 12. And now these states along with the federal government helping with funding, are writing an exam, an assessment that will go towards grade-by-grade assessments to find out whether students are meeting these standards.
What's the value of that?
Well, it's mixed, and there are critics of this effort, so I'm paraphrasing the advocates' policy's position. And what they say the value is that, as I just mentioned, it would eliminate this problem of if a student knows a certain amount of mathematics and that student happens to live in Alaska, then we can be assured that that same amount of mathematics is being measured the same way in Idaho or in Mississippi or in Massachusetts, so that if the student moves, and we have a very mobile population, and has completed adequately and proficiently the curriculum at the fifth grade in Alaska and moves to Colorado, that we know that student is well prepared and will do well in Colorado as well. We currently don't have that assurance. We would be confident that knowing something in one state means knowing it in another. You don't suddenly not know something simply by virtue of moving. Now, the critics, they come back. Their main complaint is the federal government. This is not the federal government's job, really, and that the idea that this is a huge problem is overblown, and that there are many more problems with having the federal government run dictating the content of education than the supposed problem of non-comparability across state lines.
And Alaska has not adopted this new Common Core assessment.
Right.
So the Common Core is set to begin testing in the 2014-2015 school year. What does that mean in real classrooms and for real educators?
We don't know yet. We don't have even a pilot test yet. Mm-hmm. They're going to have trouble implementing this. You know, all the states have their own test now. So how they are going to transition to this new test in 14-15 is just something we'll have to see. We don't really know what's going to happen at this point. In a lot of states, this is going to be a very controversial transition from the state test that have been giving, you know, a rosy scenario to everyone, to this new Common Core test, which it looks to me is going to be much more difficult than many of the states are given.
Well, thank you, Tom Lovelace, for joining us on Kids These Days.
All right, thank you.
That was our producer, Sarah Gonzalez, speaking with Tom Lovelace last June. He is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C., and the author of the Brown Center Report on American Education. The 2012 report was released in February. We'll link you to that and the Core Standards website on kidsthesedays.org. And this is Kids These Days. I'm Shannon Sheehy. Laurel Voracek, Dana Stahl, and Janet Valentour are with me this hour, and we're discussing standardized tests and testing. I'd like to invite you to comment on some of those issues that Tom Lovelace might have brought up, in particular with how Alaska and how our standards may or may not mesh with what this Common Core is coming. And I have to say, Laurel, you were writing some notes, so I'll invite you first.
Well, the proposed Alaska standards are now out for public comment, and the Anchorage School District is currently looking very closely at the alignment and the rigor between the proposed standards and the Common Core. One concern that we have is that it is going to change the way we do instruction. The expectations are much higher, and it's going to require a tremendous amount of professional development.
Now, when you say the expectations are much higher, you mean the expectation for what that child is supposed to be able to show that they know on these
know and be able to do on the assessment.
Okay.
Correct. And there are the resources that are being developed. There are currently two consortia, PARC and Smarter Balance, in terms of what those tests are going to look like. Both of the consortia are looking at summative year-end, both performance and, the skills assessment, but also looking at the optional assessments, where you are able to drill down to in a standard and be able to measure progress of that student throughout those throughout the year, rather than just what you get at the end of the year. What many states have been able to do, and California is an example, is they adopted the Common Core and supplemented it up to 15%. What Anchorage is currently looking at, in preparation for our comments to the State Board of Education, is where are those differences? Is the rigor the same? And if there are areas that we feel need to be supplemented in the state of Alaska, what those are, what percent of that entire content area is supplemented, because...
No, can you explain supplemented? I don't think I understand what that means.
Okay, for example, the Common Core in mathematics doesn't address patterning at the level that we feel that it needs to be in the lower grades in mathematics. And so if we are looking at the Common Core and what... is proposed from the state standards, what those differences are, and whether, what percentage is it that we're looking at in addition to what would be the Common Core. The challenge with not participating and not adopting the Common Core is that we are a very mobile state. Within our own district, we have over 25% mobility.
All right, and some of that might, and this is true for many communities in Alaska.
Absolutely.
We have a military population. Mm-hmm. We have lots of people come up for oil industry jobs, and these mm-hmm. jobs take kids here for a period of time, and then, new kids come in and so forth.
So that's why we're looking at the state's proposed standards, which they were very good in involving a broad group of stakeholders, looking at the Common Core, what are those differences, and we're currently working on what our recommendation in our district will be to our school board, and in preparation for comment back to the state. Mm-hmm. Some of the advantage, one of the things that we're, in terms of the Common Core, because it is, all but four states now, throughout the country, there's just a tremendous amount of resources being developed for teacher use. Mm-hmm. And the textbooks that are coming out are all going to be aligned to the Common Core. And so that's why it's important that we look at that in comparison to state standards, so that we are prepared for what adjustments we may need to make. And no matter what the state standards are, if they are not at the rigor and expectation of the Common Core, then how are we going to deal with that as a district? Because mm-hmm. And then the other challenge is that that comparability. Mm-hmm. Right now, the only assessment that can compare Alaska to other states is what's assessed in grades 4 and 8 in the NAEP, National Assessment of Educational Progress. And even there, it's at the state level. You can't get district level data.
So wait, this is at 4th and 8th grade, you're able to compare results of our kids taking tests with those of other kids in other parts of the country?
On the National Assessment for Educational Progress at the state level.
Okay.
We can't get it down to a district level.
Oh, okay. Those are the only two opportunities for that in 4th and 8th grade?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's every other year.
Okay.
And so that's really our comparability, and we can use only the Alaska mm-hmm. Standards. So that's why we're doing this close, this work and looking at the alignment to really just see as Anchorage School District, what is going to be our recommendation to our school board and to the Board of Education as we compare the two.
Now, quickly, before we need to take a break, Janet Valentour, you are with the Department of Education and Early Development. So I'm wondering, Alaska, as we've said, is one of very few states that has not adopted the Common Core State Standards into its own education policy. Is there a quick answer for why that is?
Well, when the Common Core Standards were created, there was an incentive for states to adopt them in their draft form in order to apply for a grant called Race to the Top. And that was the funding that Tom was talking about. Mm-hmm. Alaska chose not to participate in Race to the Top or adopt drafted Common Core Standards.
Okay.
But when the Common Core Standards did come out and the opportunity to adopt was made, it was very clear from the creators that they had to be adopted word for word. Nothing could be changed. And yes, you could add, or like Laurel said, you could amend or supplement 15%, but that's 15% was never going to be assessed in terms of this consortia that we're talking about. So Alaska decided to take a more thoughtful process, not adopt them until they were reviewed by stakeholders, and frankly, working with a national expert who was aligned with the writers of the Common Core, we found places where the Common Core probably would have made a change given one more opportunity to go back in and create a final. So we feel our version is equal in rigor to the Common Core. If we did an alignment, I would be surprised if we didn't align in terms of meeting the same standards.
Okay, so you're saying that our standards are in close alignment with those Common Core, but because we're doing it after there's already a great body of examples and evidence and other people working at this, we have the benefit of learning from other people's work and making ours better. Is that what you're saying?
I would say that we have definitely taken advantage of other people's work. We've taken a close look at what we want for our state, for what we want for our students, and they are clear in terms of how our teachers will implement them in the districts.
Okay. Well, let's get back to that when we have a time to do that after a quick break. This is Kids These Days. I'm Shanna Sheehy. Today we're talking about standardized tests. I'll be back with my guests Janet Valentour, Dana Stahl, and Laurel Voracek in the second half of the hour. This program is a production of the Content Producers Guild, an independent media organization. We're distributed by the Alaska Public Radio Network, and we record our program at KSKA FM in Anchorage. We thank our broadcast partners and our local community public radio stations. Find out more about our associations and our partner stations on our website. That's kidsthesedays.org. Still to come this hour, we drill down on the AYP, that's Adequate Yearly Progress, and hear from our teen blogger about his recent experiences taking standardized tests for college. Stay with us for that, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If there's a question bothering your brain that you think you know how to explain, you need a test. Yeah, think up a test. If it's possible to prove it wrong, you're going to want to know before too long. You'll need a test. If somebody says they figured it out and they're leaving any room for doubt, come up with a test. Test. Test it out. Find a way to show what would happen if you were incorrect. Test it out. A fact is just a fantasy unless it can be checked. Make a test.
Next time on Kids These Days, we explore how spirituality enriches the lives of young Alaskans. Guests from many faiths come together in our studio to talk about kids and God. We hear a teen-produced story about how families with and without religion communicate about values, and a new Power of One featuring a young hero who says a higher power helped her stay alive. Join us for that and much more coming up next time on Kids These Days. We're back. You're listening to Kids These Days on this locally supported public radio station. Thanks for listening and supporting community radio in Alaska. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and today Dana Stahl, Laurel Voracek, and Janet Valentour join me for a conversation about standardized testing. We do always like to hear from you, so send us your thoughts to mail@kidsthesedays.org or comment on our website or by way of our Facebook page. Before we get back into our conversation, I'd like to share this. One of the things standardized tests or standards-based assessments are used for is to see how individual schools are performing. Under the federal No Child Left Behind Act, schools report whether they made adequate yearly progress or not, all based on their students' test scores. Kids These Days contributor Jessica Cochran explains how that works.
For each year until 2014, the state of Alaska has set an AMO, Annual Measurable Objective. That's the percentage of students who must be proficient in language arts and math for a school to make adequate yearly progress, or AYP. The percentage has increased each year under No Child Left Behind, so each year it gets a little harder for schools to pass the bar. Schools also need to meet test participation requirements, graduation rates, and attendance requirements. In 2012, the AMO is 88% for language arts, 83% for math. By 2014, 100% of students will need to be proficient in both areas for a school to make AYP. There's a little wiggle room. Much the same way political polls give a margin of error, each school's precise target is determined by a confidence interval based on its population. Eric McCormick is director of assessment for the State Department of Education and Early Development.
If they're giving, they're saying, you know, candidate A has 40% and candidate B has 35%, and then they'll say plus or minus 3%. They're allowing for a little bit of error, standard error measurement. So it's a reliability factor. Basically, the smaller the school you are or the smaller the subgroup, the more potential advantage you can get out of the confidence interval. And then the larger you are, the less opportunity there is to use a confidence interval.
In another way, there is very little wiggle room. It isn't enough for a school overall to achieve their target. Each of 9 different subgroups of students also must pass the target. The subgroups include 6 ethnic groups, kids from economically disadvantaged families, students with disabilities, and students with limited English proficiency. Subgroups with 20 or fewer kids aren't considered, but if even one group that is considered doesn't meet the target requirement, the school does not make AYP.
That's been one of the criticisms of No Child Left Behind and the AYP process, is a school can be meeting in all but one cell. The entire school is labeled as not meeting AYP when it's one subgroup, one subject. And we try to keep people from saying that school is failing if it doesn't meet AYP.
There's one other way for a school to make AYP. It's called safe harbor status. If the percentage of students who test not proficient decreases by at least 10% in a year, the school is given safe harbor status and deemed to have met AYP. Diane Halfbauer is principal of the Alaska Native Cultural Charter School in Anchorage, which is currently in safe harbor status. Her school was named a Title I Distinguished School.
What they're looking at is the growth that a school is making. And particularly in our school as a new school, with lots of kids coming in with lots of needs, showing that continuous growth is really important. And the award that we won required that that growth was shown for 2 years. So it wasn't just a random thing this year. We had also shown it the previous year. And so watching our kids grow academically as well as culturally has been really exciting.
Hoffbauer says they've achieved that growth by using a solid core curriculum for reading and math, assessing kids often, and using the data to provide targeted instruction. She finds the data provided by testing useful.
Whatever your number might be in any cell on your status report, what matters is how you use your results to make academic or instructional decisions.
Schools that don't make AYP through straight test scores or safe harbor are placed in improvement status. Level 1 improvement status the first year, level 2 in the second year, and on down. That requires schools to come up with improvement plans, and if the school continues to miss the mark for AYP, eventually may require major restructuring. The precise consequences depend on whether the school receives federal Title I funds or not. We'll link to lots of resources for understanding exactly what AYP means from our website, that's kidsthesedays.org. I'm Jessica Cochran.
I'm Shannon Sheehy, and today on Kids These Days, I'm talking with Laurel Voracek and Janet Valentour and Dana Stahl, and we're discussing standardized tests and testing in our state. And Dana, actually, I wanted to talk with you. In your work that you do within the Anchorage School District, you get out and you help train and educate educators themselves. This is for the early grades, K through 6, correct? So when it comes, we're talking about AYP, we're talking about all these different measurements and all these different standardized tests today. You know, how is your work working with teachers when teachers are ultimately responsible, right, for the kids at least being presented the information that appears on these tests? Like how does that affect the work that you do when you're out there and doing your training?
Well, generally, the teachers start off the school year with the results from the previous year, and so they're very well aware of where they fell and if they have made AYP or not. So it's very critical for them to look at that data. And again, you know, it's the testing is standards-based, so we're looking back at the standards to see, you know, where is it that our instruction needs to be tweaked a little bit. What do we need to be doing to better meet the needs of these students? And it can, like Eric was saying, it can just be one subcategory where those students are really having difficulties. A lot of schools that have a high ELL population.
And ELL means English language learners.
And if those English language learners have only been in the country a year or two, then they're going to need some extra supports. So we look for ways to provide some of those extra supports so that they can make that growth that they need to make so that the whole school can make that AYP. And, you know, getting safe harbor is a real motivator to teachers because you really, even though you haven't made where you're supposed to be, it just feels really good that you are making progress and that you're able to bring some of those kids up to where they need to be.
Mm-hmm. So Dana, if a teacher is able to, at the beginning of the year, see how his or her students performed the previous year, and then from that learn, like, okay, well, maybe my ELL students didn't do as well as I'd hoped, and maybe I can learn from you and your training, Dana, to do something different or to improve on those methods. You know, how would you say it affects, like, does it really affect the way that a teacher might change the way that they do instruction that year? You know, having that information, does it really translate into them doing different things in the classroom?
I think it really does, especially if there's like coaches that can get into the classroom and model some of those lessons. But I think with the way that we can get data now on individual students, it really makes a difference because we can do not only the standards-based testing, but a lot of other testing along the way and really pinpoint what it is that needs to be emphasized. If it's just, you know, maybe patterning is where they fell down on. So then you look at your instruction as a teacher and think, oh, I did kind of miss out on that. I need to make sure I'm emphasizing that. So it just kind of gives you the guiding light, the way to go to in your instruction. Because there's so much out there. You know, it's so broad of what you could be teaching, and you have your own interests and your own
strengths.
Your own strengths. And so it just helps, I think, focus you in on what you really should be emphasizing.
And it also sounds like a teacher who has this information knows where improvement needs to be made. You said if you can get a coach to model some of those instructional differences. I mean, that sounds like teachers need support to do that. And since, you know, I've got Laurel Voracek in here, too, you're with the ASD and you're the executive director of assessment and evaluation within that district. And then, of course, Janet Valentour, who's with the state. Like, how are districts and states supporting this kind of professional development maybe that teachers need to do better ultimately with their students on the tests?
Well, one of the things, you know, like Dana just mentioned about, you know, the access now to data down at the individual student level, certainly AYP is your first brush of looking at how your school overall performed. But then it immediately goes down to each individual student in the classroom, regardless of AYP. Mm-hmm. And is that student improving? Through our reporting system, for example, in reading, there are three strands. There's the word identification skills, forming a general understanding, and then analysis of content and structure. And when a student, and students can have bad days, that's one piece of information that a teacher uses. But if a teacher is looking at their historical data and they see that word identification is continuing to be a challenge that his or her students are facing, then certainly that is where they will look to a coach if they need support, or even through grade level meetings and working with the principal in terms of what are some things that I need to be doing in my classroom. Why are you getting success in your room and this is continuing to be a challenge for me? In terms of the professional development for the district, we look at the data at the district level and we'll make some decisions with the support of the curriculum department in Title I in terms of are there certain areas that we need to focus on, you know, during this particular year. And a piece in terms of adjusting to the new state standards or the new Common Core is going to provide opportunities for the state to work with districts in helping prepare our teachers to make that transition. And that's one of the reasons why the state is not going to even, you know, the we should be adopting the standards or making the decision on the standards this summer, but they're not looking at until 2016 to actually change the assessment. And that gives us that opportunity to be able to provide that professional development. And districts are going to need the state support as we work together, because it's going to be a major shift and it's going to require a lot of PD.
A lot of coordination, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. Janet Valentore, you're with the state. Do you want to comment on that?
Well, I would like to say that the state support in terms of professional development, we have a statewide mentorship program that supports teachers in the classroom. We also have for our state system of support for districts that are at the level, the ranking level that was discussed in the AYP. If they're ranked at four, level four, they can receive some administrative coaches or other types of coaching that can support leadership. Mm-hmm. There's a Curriculum and Alignment Institute that's provided twice a year for all districts to participate in. And the website on the State Department has some formative assessment tools for teachers to use in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Well, we wanted to make sure that on this show we heard from some educators to get their perspectives on standardized testing and assessments, and we found two pretty varied views. We'll hear next from a special education teacher, Kate Koski in Hooper Bay, and then from Diane Hoffbauer, the principal of Anchorage's Alaska Native Cultural Charter School. Kate Koski's school had a proposal for a transition year after second grade to give them a little more time before taking the assessments.
We care about the kids passing the test, but as a teacher, it is excruciating to see kids break down, little third graders break down and say, I can't do this, and cry, crawl under their desk. I have even experienced fourth graders saying, I should just kill myself because of the test. Now, and I know it seems like, oh, it's just a little fourth grader, but we're in a town that has seen 10 suicides in the last couple of years. Suicide's not something that we take lightly out here. And if a test is going to affect a child's emotional status that much that they're going to become suicidal or throw that threat around, I want to take that out of that child's life. They have to deal with enough stuff already. And, yeah, just having the one extra year for them to, you know, just become more proficient, become more confident in their skills. Even if they don't pass, it's okay. They're not going to be traumatized by that test.
We don't call it standardized testing, for one. We talk about assessments, but we do ongoing progress monitoring on a regular basis where we really check in and make sure that what we're targeting for kids is what they need. So kids are used to having us sort of dipstick, you know, in their learning. We use the SBAs as a chance for kids to show the world how smart they're getting and how hard they're working. And we had kids last year who sat and worked until we had to kick them out at 3:30, you know, when the day ended, because they really saw it as a challenge to show how hard they're working. And so I think instead of being so much nervous, it's a challenge of let's take a look at this. Let's get it done. You know, let's see what we have here.
That was Principal Diane Hoffbauer of the Alaska Native Cultural Charter School in Anchorage. And before that, Kate Koski in Hooper Bay, and that's out in the southwest part of the state. This is Kids These Days. It's a program about youth, families, and family life in Alaska. And today we're talking about standardized tests and testing. I'm Shannon Sheehy, and with me this hour in Juneau is Janet Valentore, Dana Stahl, and Laura Voracek are joining me in the studio today. Those were two very divergent opinions about standardized tests, and the SBA acronym was used, that standards-based assessment. Those are used here in the state every year starting in the third grade. You know, it makes me wonder, in the case of the kids out in Hooper Bay that Kate was talking about, you know, is third grade real early to take a test like that? And surely, you know, some kids do experience extreme anxiety with tests, others probably not so much. You know, maybe someone can comment about third grade being the first time kids encounter these tests.
I'll comment because I've actually taught third grade quite a few years and have given this standardized test to students. And I think it does have to be approached in a way that students realize that it's not the end all. It's, you know, you have to let them know it's not graded. It doesn't mean you pass or fail. It's just an indicator of where you are right now. We just need to know what it is we need to teach you next year. So we need to know what it is we're going to focus on. And I think if you approach it in that way, where the students know it's more for information for the teacher and not about them, they do know that the parents are going to get a report about it, but it's informing their parents where they are, and it's informing us where we are. Mm-hmm. And I think if you just do a lot of practicing beforehand, it's not just all of a sudden the day comes and it's, you know, you're sitting in rows and you're spending all day on the test. There's lots of practice tests to give beforehand so they can practice that formatting. I would always let the kids chew gum that day because, you know, it's supposed to boost brain power, that chewing sensation. So the kids actually kind of looked forward to it because they knew they were going to get to chew gum. Their homework for the night was to go to bed early and eat a good breakfast the next morning. So, I mean, we just tried to relax some of those anxieties. Mm-hmm. So it never came off as a, you know, an end all to everything. And we did same thing. Like Diane said, we would have kids that would spend the whole day trying their hardest to do their best. So I think you just have to make sure you're setting it up that it's just informative for the teacher and mm-hmm. the parents.
And Janet Valentor, I'm wondering, do you, from your perspective working with the state, do you think there is a difference in the way the standards-based assessment and standardized tests in general are viewed if you're talking about a rural school district versus the more urban school districts? Is it a different attitude or any kinds of differences that you might perceive in the work that you do?
Well, that's a good question. And it's disheartening to hear Katie's response to how some fourth graders are managing the assessments. We do see some different perspectives in our rural areas versus our larger districts, much like Anchorage. Part of the concerns for some of those districts is the high teacher turnover and the change in instructional practice that occurs because of the uniqueness of the rural areas. And I would agree with Dana when she talks about, you know, building a culture of assessments and helping students understand that this is a picture in time. And it also gives an opportunity to share with students that we're all accountable when it comes to our education. We're accountable. You're accountable in part to learn. I'm accountable in part to be a good teacher and to make it clear to you. And the district's accountable in providing a safe facility and the learning resources that are necessary. And I would encourage that part of our assessment system not just have a summative assessment at the end of the year, but to encourage districts to incorporate a formative assessment so that those pictures in time are taken earlier in the year so students are not overwhelmed toward the end of the year if I needed to know all of this, but I wasn't aware of that.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, too, what you say about high teacher turnover in rural parts of the state, because it seems like it might be a natural fit that having a more standardized or common way of teaching specific information could actually be a benefit to schools with high teacher turnover as well as schools with high transient population of students.
May I comment on that?
Yes, please.
I think you make a really good point because ultimately with these national standards, we're going to see our universities more responsive in terms of preparing teachers so that teachers that move from any state to begin their formal teaching, that they would have an exposure to the standards and experience in creating lessons that meet the objectives of the standards. Hmm. I do see that as a possible increase of support for our rural districts.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I'm not an educator, although many of you, I think all of you, have spent time in the classroom. If you put your teacher hat back on, thinking that there might be this real specific way in which you're taught to teach information in a particular way, a particular time, and particular grades, does that, you know, do you have a cringe factor in thinking, well, gosh, you know, how can I be my teacher self? How can I be creative in the classroom if I have all of these requirements made of me so that my children can perform in this way on these tests that are given yearly after third grade? Is that something that kind of enters into your mind when you think about this, Dana?
Well, I think you still have that creative part. Because the standards are just showing me my framework. This is what the kids need to know by the end of the school year. It still gives me that creative flexibility of how I'm going to present that and how I'm going to deliver it to the students. So my instruction has a framework, a path to go down, but I can still skip or hop or, you know, turn cartwheels along that path. I don't have to do it in one set way. So it's still going to look different in my room than it looks in your room or the teacher across the hall.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, over the last few decades, I would say it's a safe generalization to say that there is more testing happening now than there was previously. Is this a trend that's going to keep continuing? You know, by the time 20 more years go by, will there be that many more tests? Is this the way that education is headed? Laurel, looks like you'd like to respond to that.
Well, it's disheartening for me when I hear the conversation put in a fashion where assessment is separate from instruction. Compared to 30 years ago, I think that we are making tremendous progress towards seeing that assessment is integrated into our instruction. And the assessment piece helps us to be more efficient, and it also helps us to see where it is that we need to possibly review, maybe go back and reteach. And so I don't see assessment as separate from instruction. I see it as an integrated piece of instruction. And when we just had the summative assessments at the end of the year, one of the challenges with that is where is the progress of the student throughout that year? And at the end of the year, you no longer have the opportunity to adjust instruction. And so that's why now when we say we have more testing, well, we're making every effort we can to do more benchmark dipstick testing, like Diane Hofbauer referred to in her comments, so that we are able to get a pulse on where the student is at various points during the year, so that we have that opportunity to reteach or refocus our instruction. So, yes, there has been an increase in testing, but I believe that it, you know, when we talked about the standardized tests we took 30 years ago, they didn't mean anything in the classroom. The classroom teacher now uses that data to guide their instruction. So that's why in our district, the assessment department and the instructional department, we work very closely together. 20 years ago, they did not. Not that they never worked together, but they did not work as closely as what we do now. And so I just see that it is a total progression of what good instruction looks like and its best practices in instruction.
Well, it seems like it's pretty important that we at least talk a little bit about the best known standardized tests, the ones that have been out there a long time and can mean a lot. For students who are college bound, for example, these standardized tests, the SATs and the ACTs, they can seem like your life, your future might depend on them. But Anchorage teenager and Kids These Days blogger Patrick Walgren has found that a laid back approach to the tests works best, at least for him.
The first time I took the SAT, I forgot about it until the night before. Instead of studying all night, I took my usual plan of action and went to bed trying to be as carefree as I could. The second time I took it, I thought I was prepared to score as high as possible. I had taken the SAT practice book with me to France over the summer, immersing myself in all things College Board. But, ironically, I did even worse than my first no-study attempt. Discouraged, I came to the conclusion that the SAT was that kid I could never play tag with, and moved on. When I took the ACT, I read over the guidelines on the website. That's it. That strategy worked out for me, but that may be me rationalizing my success. I've heard a lot of kids say that they feel better about the ACT, that it's easier. But really, it's no easier than its sibling, because it's scored on a very tall bell curve, meaning very few high or low scores. Colleges will tell prospective students that test scores aren't the be-all, end-all that decide admission. But that's not to say they aren't important. If you have good test scores, you have a better chance of getting in than someone with lower test scores. But colleges also look at GPA, extracurricular activities, essays, and, sadly for most people, alumni connections. If you have check marks in all of these categories, congratulations, you're a perfect circle. But if you're not, don't feel bad, because 99.9% of America's high school seniors are right there with you. My view of the college application process has always been that if you work hard enough, then you'll get the letter in the mail that you've been dreaming about. I got a letter from my dream school, a rejection letter. Was it the tests? Was it something else? I guess I will wait and see what other colleges think of my application. Waiting is the real test when it comes to applying for college. I'm Patrick Walgren.
Well, we have time for one last question of our panel today on Kids These Days, and it goes right along with what Patrick was just suggesting, and that is, how can caregivers best prepare their kids for those days when a standardized test is going to be taking place at school? What advice might you give people who are preparing these kids? Dana?
The homework I always gave my kids, just go to bed early, get plenty of sleep, and eat a nice healthy breakfast, and do the best you can, because it, like Laurel said, it's just a snapshot in time. So it's whatever you've learned so far, you've learned. And I think Patrick epitomized that perfectly. You know, it didn't matter how much he studied it. He was who he was.
Well, that is all the time that we have this hour, and I'd like to thank each of you for joining me today. It's been a pleasure. Janet Valentour spoke with us by phone from Juneau. She works with the State of Alaska's Department of Education and Early Development. She's an administrator for the assessment unit there. Dana Stahl works with the Anchorage School District and is a training and instructional specialist there. And Laurel Voracek is the Executive Director of Assessment and Evaluation for Alaska's largest school district, the Anchorage School District. And thanks to each of you for being with me today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We found so many resources for today's show, and we'll link you to all of them. Find all the state has to offer on standards and assessments, link to more information about Common Core standards, and we found a great piece that sums up the history of why we are where we are in education as far as testing goes, and that's all in one easy place, kidsthesedays.org. And a reminder of something we've spoken about this hour, the state is accepting public input at this time regarding the proposed new Alaska standards. You can find out when the next webinars are taking place and learn how you can give your opinion about the proposed changes. The public comment period ends in June. Kids These Days had help today from high school senior Patrick Walgren. Patrick lets us know what's going on in his life every week. He writes for Kids These Days regularly in his blog, Patrick on the Edge. Check it out from our homepage, or let us tell you about it by following us through Facebook and getting alerts that way. Jessica Cochran is our regular contributor and reported today from Anchorage. Sarah Gonzalez is our producer, business manager, web editor, and social media coordinator. Lost Lander wrote, composed, and performed our original theme music. I'm Shanna Sheehy, thanks for being with me today, and I'll see you next time.
Kids These Days is an independent production of the Content Producers Guild. The opinions shared on the program are those of the host, guest, and contributors, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of KTD producers, partners, or funders. Major funding for Kids These Days comes from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. The program is made in partnership with KSKA-FM in Anchorage and the Alaska Public Radio Network. Find out more about Kids These Days anytime at kidsthesedays.org.